This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. On Monday, we read from your emails. By far the biggest response we received last week was in reaction to our show with Bill Cosby on his recent comments about young African Americans and their parents. Tony Jones of Glassboro, New Jersey, wrote in to applaud Mr. Cosby. "I am an African-American father of two sons," he wrote. "My wife grew up in Brooklyn, and I grew up in the country. We both lost our mothers at a young age, but each of us were able to complete college and go to graduate school with strong family support. I believe the problems we are having today come from a breakdown in family support, from too many too young parents who are not prepared for parenthood, and others who spend too much time trying to make ends meet and not enough time with their children. This in turn creates a problem for educators and ultimately a problem for our society. I hope Dr. Cosby continues to speak out on this issue because I know there are many other parents of all races who agree with him." Nolan Harris also wrote to agree with Mr. Cosby's concern, but to take issue with his approach. "I become concerned when Mr. Cosby refers to other ethnic groups immigrating to America and having a greater value for education. I think his blanket statements do not take into consideration the conditions that affect our children's learning, such as the lack of funding for poorer school districts. Should we have this discussion? Yes. But pointing fingers at parents only is equal to claiming most black women are welfare cheats doing nothing but sitting at home having babies. They are both falsehoods, which lose sight of the fact that most members of our community are concerned, hardworking individuals working hard to create better life situations in our neighborhoods and schools." During our program on living history, we spoke with William Summerfield, who interprets the character of George Washington at the Mount Vernon estate. We asked Mr. Summerfield whether the colonists were prepared for the Revolutionary War, and George Washington answered,
No, we were not. We did not know what to expect at that time. It was very difficult to discern what the British would do, and some of our own citizens were interested in reconciliation rather than revolution. More than half, I would say.
Several listeners wrote in to inquire not about what Mr. Summerfield said, but how he said it. "I've always been curious about what the accents of the colonies sounded like," wrote Adam Bridge of Davis, California. "Is this voice you're speaking with an indication of how you feel?" Washington spoke. Mr. Summerfield joins us again from his home in Pennsylvania. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. That's an interesting question. I was always faced with that problem, and so I began to think it through rather carefully. First of all, George Washington was English. He thought of himself as an Englishman up to the age of 16, and then he lived in a part of Virginia called the Tidewater, where they have a specific type of southern-sounding, but not quite southern, in their overlay of their English. But the most important thing is the selection of words, words that were used in the 18th century.
Now, so you had to do research in order to figure out exactly what kind of accent you were going to use, and you're pretty sure this is close to what it might have been?
Well, we had to do research, and I had a great deal of conversation with various George Washington scholars. And like any other historian, you have certain facts, and then you make an educated guess about the facts. So we thought Washington is an Englishman, and then he had a Tidewater accent on top of it, which you can hear today if you travel in the Tidewater areas of Virginia.
Was it hard to learn that accent?
No, it was harder to learn the use of 18th century words and bring them into play. The character must sound as if he's from a different time in a different place.
We received another email on this topic from Fred in California. He said that he's read that Washington had a high-pitched, percussive voice. Have you ever heard that?
No, I haven't. I know that Jefferson had a high-pitched voice. Washington was a very large man, a large-chested man, and I suspect that his voice was somewhat deeper than that. Washington didn't like speaking out a great deal because he had bad teeth and didn't like to show them. But we do know about his inaugural address, and that was read on Wall Street, and not many people heard it because he didn't really have the ability to project it out without amplification, which he did not have.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
William Summerfield portrays President George Washington both on tour around the country and at the Mount Vernon Estate in Alexandria, Virginia. He joined us by phone. And finally, during our program on the naturalist John James Audubon, Rachel Ann Glenn in Wichita, Kansas, offered this silly aside. She wrote, Ian Fleming's hobby was birdwatching. His 20th century hero was an ornithologist named Bond, James Bond. That's how the intrepid agent got his name. We contacted the Ian Fleming Foundation and received this reply from John Cork, co-author of James Bond, The Legacy. He wrote, Ian Fleming was at most a casual bird watcher at his house in Jamaica, where he spent a couple of months each year. Fleming owned, as best as I can tell, one book on the subject, Birds of the West Indies by James Bond. The real Bond did much work in Jamaica, and in 1964, he paid Fleming a surprise visit. You can email us at totn@npr.org. Please include the topic of the show in the subject line. Tell us the city and state where you're writing from. And if necessary, give us guidance on how to pronounce your name.